From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM, the last hour of our program tonight. Joshua Warren joins us with his paranormal moment. Here's what's happening. Is the United States pushing for a new economic world order at the G20 summit? The United States apparently will urge world leaders this week to launch a new push in November to rebalance the world economy. But there are doubts that national governments will bow to the external advice. A document outlining the U.S. position ahead of the September 24-25 Group of 20 summit in Pittsburgh said exporters, which include China, Germany, and Japan, should consume more, while debtors like the United States ought to boost savings. It's going to be interesting. Federal counterterrorism officials are warning local police to patrol stadiums, hotels, and entertainment complexes for suspicious activity after the arrest of a Colorado man suspected of a far-reaching terror plot. But New York City Police Commissioner Ray Kelly downplayed terror fears there, saying there was no specific threat and he wasn't increasing manpower or security efforts as a result of the new directive by the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security. The FBI and DHS also issued joint alerts to police around the country to watch storage centers and public transportation systems for any unusual behavior. Well, the person who watches terrorist activities for us, Doug Hagman on the line, Homeland Security U.S. Doug, what is this? The commissioner of New York saying it's not that big, and then we've got the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security saying this is a possible threat.
Yeah, hi, George. Indeed, this is a very real and dire threat. As a matter of fact, probably the most real threat that we've had since 9/11 in terms of immediate potential terrorism here inside the United States. The warning, I'm intimately familiar with this case, by the way. I've been in New York City here the last couple of weeks. I know of this case and the people involved in this issue here. So speaking from that knowledge position, I can tell you that the latest warning originates from the arrest of a gentleman, a 24-year-old Afghani native by the name of Najibullah Zazi, who currently lives in Colorado. On September 9th, he took a this man, by the way, has been under surveillance by the federal authorities for the better part of a year and a half, during which time he had gone to Pakistan, attended al-Qaeda training camps, received instructions on weaponry and explosives, came back to the United States. Suddenly on September 9th, Wednesday, September 9th, he drove from Colorado straight through to New York City, hooked up with some friends in New York City, and the long and short of it is the authorities had lost him briefly with the assistance or as a result of some issues with the surveillance that was on him involving a mosque or an imam at a local mosque. Because of that, they had to obtain emergency search warrants. They executed the search warrants Sunday night, raided three homes in New York City, three apartment buildings, found backpacks, brand new backpacks, scales and batteries inside the scales that would be used for measuring explosives. They found field tests for explosives, tested positive, cell phones. And on one particular cell phone, they found pictures of Grand Central Station, for example. They found also images of notes, handwritten notes taken by Zazi while he was at the al-Qaeda training camps on how to construct explosives and detonators and such. So, indeed, this is very real. Where we stand right now is the authorities in New York have about 12 known terrorists under surveillance, 24-hour surveillance, and about a half a dozen individuals in Colorado under surveillance.
Why is the commissioner downplaying this?
Well, I think it's a play on words more than anything, where he's saying that they're not going to increase security. I think that it's he's not really being genuine when he says that. And, of course, you have to realize that these warnings were not meant to be public. These are warnings to law enforcement, advisories to law enforcement agencies to increase their vigilance over certain aspects of security of stadiums and public places that don't undergo the rigorous security measures of, like, airports, for example.
And also, Doug, I want to get your take on Afghanistan for just a quick minute.
Sure.
I mean, and it looks like that we're going to be sending in more troops, lots more. We went into Afghanistan during 9/11 when the Taliban refused to release and give us bin Laden. That was our deal. We said to them, give us bin Laden. They kept saying no. We tried to get other nations to back us. We got them all to back us except Pakistan at the time. And the Taliban that was running Afghanistan at the time said, no, we're not going to give up bin Laden. We went in to get bin Laden. We failed. We did not do that. We occupied Afghanistan, and we stayed there. Now, here we are, 8 years later, putting more troops into Afghanistan. We haven't found bin Laden. I don't understand why we're there.
You know, that's a great point. I'm not certain I can speak to that beyond the intelligence value that I'm hearing. And you know, there's some disharmony here with respect to that. Our intelligence sources are saying that there's really little intelligence coming from the Afghan theater. It's coming, more importantly, would be from Pakistan, you know, the tribal areas of Pakistan, where al-Qaeda has virtually moved to at this point. So the Afghan theater is, at this point, questioned even by intelligence officials in the United States. So I'm not even sure I'm not sure what value we have at this point being there.
Bin Laden, Doug? You know, we talked last week when there was a new audio report. Where the heck is this guy?
Well, that's a great question. I'm not even sure. And you know, I've talked about this before. I'm not even sure that there's enough proof of life here in the last several messages that we can even say he's alive. If, in fact, he is alive, all intelligence would indicate he's either in the tribal areas of Pakistan or potentially in Iran. The latter, of course, has some political ramifications and agendas to it. I don't know. I'm not convinced he's alive, George.
If he's not alive, you know, we know that then, and there's something wrong here.
I would say there's indeed something wrong that needs to be investigated a little bit more, or a lot more fully than just the lip service our administration, the past two administrations have paid to this. So indeed, okay. Yes.
All right, Doug Hagman, Homeland Security U.S. Thank you, Doug. The National Security Advisor during the administration of President Jimmy Carter says the United States should shoot down Israeli jets if that nation chooses to take military action against a nuclear project in Iran. Zbigniew Brzezinski said, "We're not exactly impotent little babies." Now, Israel long has been thought to be considering a military strike against operations of Iran that could result in a nuclear weapon for the regime of Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Israel has stated that it is unwilling to have its future threatened by a leader who believes it should be wiped off the map, as Ahmadinejad has stated, with access to nuclear weapons. But such an Israeli attack on Iran probably would have to fly over coalition airspace in Iraq. Brzezinski said the U.S. has to be serious about denying Israel the right to attack. Air travel is being overhauled with a new aircraft design which plans to seat passengers, would you like to do this, facing each other in rows. The controversial design is intended to save space and money and could see 50% more passengers packed on to each plane. Howard Guy is the director of United Kingdom's company Design Q. He acknowledges that some people will not be happy with the plan, but says they will be able to pay less for any inconvenience. Now, I know in the military, whenever we flew face-to-face. That's military stuff. I'm not sure as passengers you'd like to fly that way wherever you go. Fruity, candy, clove, and chocolate-flavored cigarettes are now banned in the U.S. under the new Family Smoking Prevention and Tobacco Control Act. The ban is part of a national effort by the FDA to reduce smoking, considered to be the leading cause of preventable death in America. The FDA's ban on candy and fruit-flavored cigarettes aims to reduce the number of children who start to smoke and who become addicted to tobacco products. And the ban on smoking in public places, such as bars and restaurants, has been one of the greatest public health debates of the early 21st century. Now, two large studies suggest that communities that pass laws to curb secondhand smoke get a big payoff. a drop in heart attacks. Overall, American, Canadian, European cities that have implemented smoking bans and had an average of 17% fewer heart attacks in the first year compared with communities who had not taken such measures. In Massachusetts, a former Postal Service employee has pleaded guilty to stealing more than 30,000 DVDs that moved through a Western Massachusetts post office. Miles Weathers took the DVDs that were mailed by Netflix to customers for a year beginning in January of 2007. Federal prosecutors say the movie rental company alerted the Springfield, Massachusetts post office officials that a suspiciously high number of DVDs simply were disappearing. As many as 100 movies a week were disappearing. Weathers was arrested in February of last year after investigators filmed him taking DVDs from packages and slipping them into his backpack. He faces 10 months to 16 months in prison and restitution costs of about $38,000 at his December 23rd sentencing. Dan Brown, the lost symbol, breaks records for the first week of sales. He sold over 500,000 copies just in the first week alone. It is the fastest-selling adult book of all time there in the United Kingdom. Was that book, The Lost Symbol, based on the life of William Henry? William's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. We've got a fascinating night tonight with investigative mythologist and author William Henry. Not only are we going to talk later about Stargate 2012 and Revelation 2012, his latest work, Freedom's Gate, The Lost Symbol in the U.S. Capitol. Some are beginning to say that Dan Brown's blockbuster, The Lost Symbol, might be based a little bit on William Henry's work and research. Let's bring William in for the show. William, how are you?
Wonderful, George. It's great to talk with you.
It's nice to know that you've been starred in a Dan Brown book.
You know, all this time I thought I was Daniel Jackson from Stargate, and then suddenly that changes. So I'm having just a touch of an identity crisis tonight, George.
Look, you're not accusing him of plagiarism by any means or infringing on any of your copyright work, but it is very similar that you've done a very solid investigative report about the symbols in the U.S. Capitol, which we'll talk about, and his blockbuster novel comes out, The Lost Symbol, which is very close, isn't it?
Well, and as you recall, we talked about this on December 7th on Coast of 2008, yes. This very thing. And I just have to say that there's a mild spoiler report or spoiler alert here for readers of or intended readers of the Lost Symbol. But basically, on November 22nd, 2008, I was at Chet Snow's Secrets Conference in Tempe, Arizona, when I gave my presentation, The American Right. And in this presentation, I presented my findings about the U.S. Capitol, and I said that it's a sacred space. In fact, it's a portal or a stargate. And the dome of the Capitol is a model of the human head, which is called the dome in slang. And the key to achieving higher spiritual consciousness is encoded in this amazing painting called The Apotheosis of George Washington. I went on to state that the brain's pineal gland has to be activated to achieve this consciousness. And in fact, it triggers a secretion that is thought of as the biblical manna or the dew of heaven that transfigures us into a light body. And I concluded that presentation by inviting my viewers to come to the rotunda of the U.S. Capitol with me. Let's lay on our backs. Let's look up at this amazing painting, and let's tap into this higher consciousness. Well, I'm reading Dan Brown's The Lost Symbol, and his character, Robert Langdon, is called to the Capitol and because he's the only one that can open the secret portal or stargate in the Capitol. And the key to this stargate, this portal, is in the apotheosis of George Washington, this painting in the dome of the rotunda. And further, what he learns later in the book, the book is sort of like an Oreo cookie, if you will. The apotheosis turns up at the beginning and then at the end with the usual Dan Brown brilliance in between.
Sure.
And then at the end, lo and behold, Robert Langdon is laying on his back in the rotunda, looking up at the apotheosis and recognizing it's the key to higher consciousness. And his cohort asks him to put himself in the mindset that he's a child, he's out on his canoe, and that painting now transforms into a gateway into the stars. He's seeing a starry night. And in fact, Langdon actually hallucinates or imagines that this painting morphs into a gateway. And I'm thinking, right on, Dan, that's exactly what we're talking about here. This is, I published this last year, and I'm thrilled that you've tapped into this concept, because this is the key. This is the gateway to higher consciousness, and it's been hidden in the dome of our U.S. Capitol for over 145 years. And you, Dan, and me, and my co-author, Dr. Mark Gray, we're the first three to discover it at the same time.
At the same time. How about that?
It's got to be the greatest literary synchronicity of all time.
Or coincidence.
Well,
of course,
and I
you
say,
know.
Yeah, and I say literary synchronicity. I always point to Norman Mailer as a classic literary synchronicity. He was writing a book. I can't remember the title, but he was in an apartment building. And at first, there was no Russian spy in his novel. But suddenly, this Russian spy creeps into his novel, and he starts writing about it. Long story short, there was a Russian spy living one floor beneath Norman Mailer.
Jeez. Well, at least what Dan Brown does is he makes reference to the dome and consciousness, Freemasonry. And, you know, that's everything you've been talking about for years, William.
Yeah.
So I guess a little publicity that way is not a bad thing.
Dan Brown has an amazing gift to take esoteric, occult, and somewhat, well, let's say very controversial subjects and make them palatable to millions upon millions of people. And what I have tonight is the deep satisfaction of knowing that the facts that I have and Dr. Gray and I have put together in our book, Freedom's Gate, is going to see a wide audience. And I am thrilled that his readership is picking up on it. On his Facebook page, they're commenting that if Dan Brown's readers can plug into this consciousness epitomized in the apotheosis, this notion that it encodes that we can transform ourselves into vastly more enlightened beings, then this could transform the world as we know it. And that is the message of Freedom's Gate, that painting is in fact the key, and that true freedom and true liberty awaits all who understand the intricacies of that painting.
Well, and to me, what is very worthwhile is if people read his novel, but then they turn to you for the solid, real evidence in your work, you both win.
Yeah, and it's not only the solid, real evidence. Not only do I have the fact behind his fiction, but actually, Freedom's Gate is the guidebook that tells you how to achieve this higher consciousness. I mean, Freedom's Gate is about the lost symbols in the U.S. Capitol, but what it really is a gateway itself into and how to plug into this higher consciousness. That's what we intended it to be. And wow, we couldn't ask for a better scenario than to have Dan Brown on our side making this happen. And, you know, we'd love to meet Dan Brown someday and lay on our backs in the rotunda with him and look at it together. And I've heard rumblings that Dan may be interested in meeting me and Dr. Gray, and I hope that one day that happens.
I hope so, too. William, let's talk about the Capitol, the dome, first of all. Tell us about the meaning behind it when it was first constructed.
Well, you have to go back to the gentleman who co-conceived the United States Capitol. We're talking about George Washington and Thomas Jefferson. And their intention was twofold. One, they intended the U.S. Capitol to be a temple. Jefferson literally called it a temple of sovereignty. In fact, there were poems at the time, 1793, that literally called the U.S. Capitol the temple of celestial liberty. They assigned cosmic significance, sacred significance to this place. What they also envisioned, George, was that the United States Capitol would not only be a temple built in stone, but it would also be an analog to the United States Constitution, which they also believed was an oracle. They referred to it as an oracle, which means a divinely received revelation. And so they expected or intended that the United States Capitol and the Constitution would go hand in hand together, one a sacred document, a divinely received document, the other a temple whose design itself could be interpreted as being received from heaven because it is a temple of celestial liberty.
More to talk about with William Henry when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. His website, williamhenry.net, and we're talking about his latest work, Freedom's Gate, The Lost Symbols in the U.S. Capitol. And also, when we come back later on tonight with William, we'll talk about 2012 and get his take on that as well. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And you know, with our brand new iPhone and iPod Touch capabilities for Coast to Coast AM app, which you can get more information by going to the coasttocoastam.com website. Let me read you a couple emails, by the way. It says, "Hey, George, been a Streamlink member for many years now, and I've just downloaded the new iPhone application. It's awesome. I encourage others to not only download the new app, but sign up for Streamlink as well. It brings Coast listening to a whole new higher dimension." And that's from Travis. And then we've got this from Pam. "Just got the app for iPhone. Greatest thing since sliced bread. Absolutely love it." How about that? So if you've got an iPhone and you want to play around with some of this, and also visit the coasttocoastam.com homepage to get further details, you can also play the new alien abduction game right off your iPhone. Back in a moment with William Henry on Coast to Coast AM. Why the Capitol, William? What was so special about it? Why did they decide to do this with the Capitol?
Well, they wanted to build in stone their ideals, ultimately. They wanted that city on the hill. I mean, there's all kinds of research that's been done on the mindset of the founding fathers. Many of them were Christians. Many of them were deists. And both seem to subscribe to this idea that America was the new Atlantis, the new Jerusalem, if you will, of the biblical interpretation. And they wanted to create, even Ronald Reagan talked about this, the city, the shining city on the hill, this beacon of hope, this beacon of liberty. And so it was very important that they show their newfound power to the world. And so as they're doing this, they went into many of the esoteric texts. They also went into ancient Rome, and literally Jefferson called the reason we call our Capitol Hill Capitol Hill is because that's what they called the mountain of the gods in Rome. It was Capitoline Hill. That's where Jupiter's temple was located. And in fact, later, after Washington's passing, there are statues that are made of Washington that were designed to sit in the rotunda of Washington as Jupiter or Zeus in his Greek form. So there was a very definite intention that this was a sacred space, it was a temple, and that Washington was in fact a deified being or was going to be deified.
You have come to the conclusion about the Capitol that it's a Stargate and that its primary painting encodes the secret of our transformation. Why don't you elaborate on this?
Sure. Let's begin by answering the question, what is a Stargate? Right. A Stargate, first of all, is a communications link between stars from the heart of one sun or the heart of one star to another star. And the metaphysical message here is that everything in our universe is interconnected. A Stargate is also a place on Earth, a dot of real estate that's considered a sort of a trance portal to other worlds or realms where energy pulsing or ringing from our star, from other stars or star systems like Cygnus, like Sirius, like Orion, is easily received. And often what you find is that these Stargates, these trance portals, are marked by mounds, symbolic of the primordial mound or the first place of creation. So let's look at the Capitol, the U.S. Capitol. It resembles a beehive, which is intentional. That's a very important Masonic symbol, the beehive. Their lodges are considered beehives.
Right.
But the beehive is also a sort of a mound. And when you're looking at that great white mountain sitting there on Capitol Hill, you are looking at a portal. You're actually looking at a solar temple, George, because it is oriented to the sun. It is a solar temple. It is designed literally with that dome to as a vortex generator in order to spin this energy in there. The reason why the dome of the U.S. Capitol and the dome of the Vatican, why both of those places are power spots, is because they were designed to be by people who knew this sacred geometry, that knew how to tap the energy of the stars. The third thing, a Stargate is a transportation device that moves people or objects across intergalactic space from locations on Earth in less than light speed. And I'm not saying that the U.S. Capitol is such a portal. However, it is, and as Dr. Gray, my co-author, refers to it, a flight simulator, because it does teach you in its symbolism this process of transforming ourselves from flesh and blood into a light being, preparatory to going through that gate and traveling to these other star systems.
When they made it, was it done on purpose? It had to have been. This wasn't an accident, was it?
No, I think it was very intentional, and we have to put in here that the Capitol has evolved, that the dome of the Capitol that we see now in the present Capitol isn't the same as the one that existed when they laid the first cornerstone in 1793. The Capitol was destroyed during the War of 1812, and then it was rebuilt. And then in 1856 is when Thomas Eustick Walter, the famed Philadelphia architect, presented this astonishing watercolor portraying this just amazingly beautiful dome, and Congress decided to put funds forth towards the creation of this actual dome. And it was during the Lincoln administration that the new high Capitol dome, as they call it, was actually raised. In fact, one of my favorite paintings by Alan Cox in the House wing of the United States Capitol shows Lincoln as this sort of magician. He's got his top hat on, his arms are up, and he is willing that dome to rise, because to Lincoln, that dome was a symbol of the continuation of the nation. It was had been threatened, of course, during the Civil War. People wanted to cut off funds, say it was stupid to be putting money into the building of this dome when we need it for the war. Lincoln said, absolutely not. The dome symbolizes the continuation of the Union, and its construction must continue.
Tell me about this key to higher consciousness there.
Well, the key is two things. One, it is the ring or vibration that I just spoke of that is present at these portals, these gateways. And the key is also a key of knowledge. It's a key that unlocks the mind. As I mentioned a moment ago, the primary place that this key works, the keyhole, is literally the pineal gland. And what we're asked to do in the esoteric tradition is get these secretions that contain the secrets that will activate what is thought of as our light body. I mentioned a moment ago that Dan Brown has Robert Langdon laying on his back in the rotunda looking up at the apotheosis. They have a conversation about the pineal gland, about the importance of awakening that pineal gland and causing these secretions to be released, because if your eye is single, your whole body will be filled with light. That's a biblical quote. And so, again, that's a kind of a crossover here of what Dan Brown and I are both trying to say at the same time, that that is the key right there to this higher consciousness, is awakening or activating the pineal gland.
By being on your back looking up at the dome, would that do that? Would that kick you into that state?
It did. It certainly had that effect on me, and apparently it also had that effect on Robert Langdon, because he literally, in the story, hallucinates seeing this painting open up. He sees concentric rings coming out of it. And the concentric rings, as I've explored in numerous of my DVD presentations and books, symbolizes both the ring, wah, 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 imagine sound coming out of your mouth, but it also symbolizes a vortex. The concentric ring symbolizes a two-dimensional representation of the three-dimensional vortex or portal. So I think we're both on the same page here, that that is the potential effect that you have here. And I know I looked a little funny when I was laying on my back there. And so
they didn't come and haul you away, William?
I quickly pulled out my camera and pretended I was taking pictures, which I actually was doing. But I call it our right. I believe it's our right to be able to go into the Capitol, the temple, and worship in this way. And I think it's important that we do. And in fact, as I stated in my presentation, what we need is millions of people going to the Capitol, laying on their back in the rotunda, and connecting with the higher consciousness of that place. And if they can't go there, they can go there in their minds. In fact, that's something that Dan Brown also discusses, and I'm not spoiling anything here for readers. It's just it's been reported that he talks about noetic science and the importance of building the temple in our mind. that literally through our minds we can connect with the dome, we can connect with the rotunda and send it energy. I mean, think about this, George. Five times a day, Muslims turn and pray, turn in the direction of Mecca and pray to the black stone in Mecca. What is the effect of that? Well, it unifies people. It sets a positive intention. What if a couple, three times a day, maybe even casually, Americans turned to the east, looked to the Capitol dome, and sent positive affirmations, positive vibrations, positive intentions to that dome?
Good point.
I think it would have a dramatic effect.
It works. Tell me a little bit more about some of the features at the Capitol, which you believe makes it a temple. And what's the significance of that?
Well, anybody that has been to the Capitol, most people go as children, you know, 10, 12 years old. I know this because I take people on tours there, and they say it's amazing to go back to Washington, D.C. and see the memorials, which are actually temples, as adults, especially after you have a little bit of background knowledge. And so you're standing in front of this amazing white mountain, and it's almost overwhelming. And the sun's on it. It's just amazingly bright. And what you start, though, to look at is you say, well, wait a minute. Okay, so we've got a building made of stone. We have an image of a deified being inside. That would be George Washington in the Dome of the Rotunda. You've got religious imagery and inscriptions. You've got massive columns. You've got absolutely palpable spiritual energy that you can feel. I mean, you stand up straight when you walk in that rotunda, at least you want to. You've got terrifying guardians. They've got M16s or who knows what other kind of automatic weapons, strange visitors, mystic visitors, closed doors, private members, and especially that orientation to the sun. All of these are qualifications that further identify the U.S. Capitol as a temple. But the one that really gets me is that the U.S. Capitol has a crypt.
Hmm.
Now, churches have crypts. Temples have crypts.
That's right.
Civic buildings like the IRS and the Department of Justice and the Supreme Court doesn't even have a crypt. But the U.S. Capitol has a crypt. It's one story beneath the rotunda. And this crypt has 40 columns in it that the guidebooks tell you are modeled after the Temple of Poseidon in Athens. Now, why is that important? Well, the reason is because, as I mentioned a moment ago, the mindset of the founding fathers, based on their Rosicrucian roots, was that the United States is the new Atlantis. Poseidon was the priest king of the original Atlantis.
I hope we don't go the same way of Atlantis.
Well, that's what we're trying to avoid
problem.
Right now, aren't we?
Exactly.
And so here they are, paying homage to the priest king of Atlantis, Poseidon, in the crypt of the United States Capitol. And it's in the middle of the crypt, by the way, George, that you see this remarkable star that is called the Seed of Washington. It is the marker. It's considered the actual center of Washington. All of the mile markers, everything are based relative to that seed in the center of the crypt. And then one story beneath that is the Tomb of Washington.
Amazing. Amazing work. Now, how did this come to you, William? I mean, you've worked and you've looked at this for years, but I mean, what happened? Something had to spark you.
Well, actually, I've been looking at especially the apotheosis of George Washington, the painting in the dome that shows him sitting on a rainbow as a deified being in front of the sun gate with all of these pagan gods around him. I started working on that in 2003 when I did a presentation called The Nation Under God, which was an exploration of the signs and symbols of the founding fathers. And at that time, that painting was just a little too bright for me. I really didn't know what it meant, but I locked onto it and continued to start doing research on it and found that there was like nothing available about this painting from an esoteric perspective. There was the same old sort of Wikipedia sort of understanding of it that was out there, but nobody had taken time to peel back the layers of this painting. And what happened was I was in Pennsylvania. It was September 22nd of 2008, exactly 1 year ago. And I was giving my presentation on MORPH, and which is subtitled The Light Body Activation. And I was showing the connection between George Washington on the rainbow and the Christian images of Jesus on the rainbow. In Christian imagery, when they show the resurrected Jesus on his throne, he's sitting on a rainbow. And I'm noting that so is George Washington in this painting. And further, I triangulated those images with the Tibetan images of their lamas who have achieved what they call mystic rapture or the great perfection. They are portrayed on a rainbow or in a rainbow. And so I point my audience up into the rotunda, and I say, encircling George Washington is this gate of stars, which is literally a gate of stars. There are 72 stars that surround George Washington in this painting. And I say, this is George Washington in a stargate. And I'll never forget, Dr. Mark Gray and his wife Michelle were in the audience, and he raised his hand and he said, are you saying the United States Capitol is a stargate? And I said, that's exactly what I'm saying. And the next thing I know, Mark is digging wormholes through Google and trying to dig out as much information about it as he possibly can, because it's one of those things that if you lock onto it, it becomes an obsession, and that's what happened. And so that's why we started working together.
And when you say stargate, we're talking about a consciousness-type stargate, aren't we?
That's right. Yeah. I mean, what we're talking about is opening a hole in our head, in a way, opening up the higher energy centers at the top of our head, our chakra, and awakening ourselves to this unseen reality. Lynn McTaggart calls it the field. The noetics people call it just simply noetics, and say that there is this divine reality substantial to the worlds of things and lives and minds, as they say, and that if we can tap into that consciousness, that is, in fact, the basis for a new global science and global consciousness that we're all connected to. It's the Akashic field is another term for it.
You know, Lynn McTaggart's work is highlighted in a couple pages of Dan Brown's book.
I noted that, and that's the importance of this here. That's why I was so thrilled that Dan Brown picked up on some of these concepts that I had in The American Rite, because it's all about getting this collective consciousness together. I mean, he actually has a section in the book where he says that all of us have this encoded in our DNA. And to me, Freedom's Gate is proof that what Lynn McTaggart says and what Dan Brown says is true. There is this field of cosmic consciousness that we can all tap into. And this is Stargate metaphysics. It's reflected in the saying, E pluribus unum, out of many, one. And so it's time for us now to view the Capitol as a temple, to view it as a portal, and to access the higher consciousness that is permeating that place through its spiritual imagery in the apotheosis of George Washington and in its actual location in space.
Isn't some of the artwork at the Capitol, does it mirror some of the artwork at the Vatican?
Yes, it does. In fact, Constantino Brumidi, it was the painter of the apotheosis. He was a Vatican painter who had restored some of the works of the Renaissance master Raphael, who was a competitor of Michelangelo. And Raphael, Michelangelo were benefactors of this resurgence of alchemical information, hermetic information from the ancient world that suddenly had arisen in Italy. So Brumidi is in the Vatican. He's learning all of this. And then his story is very fascinating. I'd like to just talk about just briefly here for a minute, George.
Sure.
Because he's in the Vatican, and suddenly there's a revolution in Rome in 1848. And it's a Republican revolution. The people decide they want to have more choices than becoming Catholic or becoming Jewish. They want to be free to explore other religions. Well, the Vatican doesn't like that, and there's a conflict. Brumidi sides against the Vatican. After the Vatican regains control, Brumidi is imprisoned. And what happens is that the Jesuits come to Rome from New York and tell the Pope that they need Brumidi in New York to paint in churches and cathedrals. And if the Vatican will spring him from prison, that they'll kind of keep a watchful eye on him. Well, the deal is made, and the hitch is that Brumidi can leave Rome. He can be exiled to the United States where he wants to go, but his wife and children have to remain behind in Italy, sort of under Vatican watch. So he comes to the United States, paints in New York for a while, goes to Mexico City briefly, and then finally his destiny is met in the United States Capitol when he's hired to paint the newly created corridors. What he does is he does mirror images of Raphael's work in the Vatican.
Remarkable.
It's phenomenal.
We'll be back with William Henry. We'll talk more about the symbolism at the Capitol, and also we'll get his take on 2012, because he has produced one heck of a DVD called Revelation 2012. We'll be back.